inspired me to speak to him, without which I should be only a mere simpleton. Yet as soon as those persons spoke to him, who sought for preeminence, and who could not suffer any good but what came from themselves, he was so weak as to be imposed on with impressions against the truth. This weakness has hindered him from doing all the good which otherwise he might have done. After I had spoken to him, he said that he had it in his mind to give me Father Lacombe for director. He was a man illuminated of God, who well understood the inward path and had a singular gift of pacifying souls. Greatly was I rejoiced when the bishop appointed him, seeing thereby his authority united with the grace which already seemed to have given him to me, by a union and a fusion of supernatural life and love. The fatigues I had and watchings with my daughter threw me into a violent sickness attended with exquisite pain. The physicians judged me in danger, yet the sisters of the house quite neglected me, especially the stewardess. She was so penurious that she did not give me what was necessary to sustain life. I had not a penny to help myself with, as I had reserved nothing to myself. Besides, they received all the money which was remitted to me from France, which was very considerable. I practiced poverty and was in necessity even among those to whom I had given all. They wrote to Father Lacombe desiring him to come to me as I was so extremely ill. Hearing of my condition, he was so touched with compassion as to walk on foot all night. He traveled not otherwise, endeavoring in that, as in everything else, to imitate our Lord Jesus Christ. As soon as he entered the house, my pains abated. When he had prayed and blessed me, laying his hand on my head, I was perfectly cured, to the great astonishment of my physicians, who were not willing to acknowledge the miracle. These sisters advised me to return to my daughter. Father Lacombe returned with me. A violent storm arose on the lake, which made me very sick and seemed likely to upset the boat. But the hand of Providence remarkably appeared in our favor, so much so that it was taken notice of by the mariners and passengers. They looked upon Father Lacombe as a saint. We arrived at Tonon, where I found myself so perfectly recovered that instead of making and using the remedies I had proposed, I went into a retreat and stayed 12 days. Here I made vows of perpetual chastity, poverty, and obedience, covenanting to obey whatever I should believe to be the will of God, also to obey the Church, and to honor Jesus Christ in such a manner as he pleased. At this time I found that I had the perfect chastity of love to the Lord, it being without any reserve, division, or view of interest. Perfect poverty by the total privation of everything that was mine, both inwardly and outwardly. Perfect obedience to the will of the Lord, submission to the Church, and honor to Jesus Christ in loving himself only, the effect of which soon appeared. When by the loss of ourselves we are passed into the Lord, our will is made one and the same with that of the Lord according to the prayer of Christ. As thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, grant that they also may be one of us. John 17:21. Oh, but it is then that the will is rendered marvelous, both because it is made the will of the Lord, which is the greatest of miracles, also because it works wonders in him. For as it is the Lord who wills in the soul, that will has its effect. Scarcely has it willed, but the thing is done. But some may say, why then so many oppressions endured? Why do not these souls, if they have such power, set themselves free from them? We answer that if they had any will to do anything of that sort against divine providence, that would be the will of flesh or the will of man and not the will of God. John 1:13. I rose generally at midnight, waking at the proper time, but if I wound up my alarm watch, then I used not to awake in time. I saw that the Lord had the care of a father and a spouse over me. When I had any indisposition and my body wanted rest, he did not awake me, but at such times I felt even in my sleep a singular possession of him. Some years have passed wherein I have had only a kind of half-sleep, but my soul waked the more for the Lord, as sleep seemed to steal from it every other attention. The Lord made it known also to many persons that he designed me for a mother of great people, but a people simple and childlike. They took these intelligences in a literal sense and thought it related to some institution or congregation. But it appeared to me that the persons whom it would please the Lord that I should win over to him, and to whom I should be as a mother, through his goodness, should have the same union of affection for me as children have for a parent, but a union much deeper and stronger, giving me all that was necessary for them, to bring them to walk in the way by which he would lead them, as I shall show. Chapter 4. I would willingly suppress what I am now about to write, if anything of it were my own, also on account of the difficulty of expressing myself, as because few souls are capable of understanding divine leadings, which are so little known and so little comprehended. I have myself never read of anything like it. I shall say something of the interior dispositions I was then in, and I shall think my time well employed. If it serves you who are willing to be of the number of my children, it serves such as are already my children, to induce them to let God glorify himself in them after his manner, and not after their own. If there be anything which they do not comprehend, let them die to themselves. They will find it much easier to learn by experience than from anything I could say. Expression never equals experience. After I had come out of the trying condition I have spoken of, I found it had purified my soul instead of blackening it as I had feared. I possessed God after a manner so pure and so immense as nothing else could equal. In regard to thoughts or desires, all was so clean, so naked, so lost in the divinity, that the soul had no selfish movement, however plausible or delicate, both the powers of the mind and the very senses being wonderfully purified. Sometimes I was surprised to find that there appeared not one selfish thought. The imagination, formerly so restless, now no more troubled me. I had no more perplexity or uneasy reflections. The will, being perfectly dead to all its own appetites, was become void of every human inclination, both natural and spiritual, and only inclined to whatever God pleased and to whatever manner he pleased. This vastness or enlargedness, which is not bounded by anything, however plain or simple it may be, increases every day. My soul is partaking of the qualities of her spouse, seems also to partake of his immensity. My prayer was in an openness and singleness inconceivable. I was, as it were, born up on high, out of myself. I believe God was pleased to bless me with this experience. At the beginning of the new life, he made me comprehend, for the good of other souls, the simplicity and desirableness of this passage of the soul into God. When I went to confess, I felt such an immersion of the soul into him that I could scarcely speak. This ascension of the spirit, wherein God draws the soul so powerfully, not into his own inmost recess, but into himself, is not operated till after the death of self. The soul actually comes out of itself to pass into its divine object. I call it death, that is to say, a passage from one thing to another. It is truly a happy Passover for the soul and its passage into the promised land. The spirit which is created to be united to its divine origin has so powerful a tendency to him that if it were not stopped by a continual miracle, its moving quality would cause the body to be drawn after it by reason of its impetuosity and noble ascent. But God has given it a terrestrial body to serve for a counterpoise. This spirit, then, created to be united to its origin, without any medium or interstice, feeling itself drawn by its divine object, tends to it with an extreme violence, in such sort that God, suspending for some time the power which the body has to hold back the spirit, it follows with ardency. When it is not sufficiently purified to pass into God, it gradually returns to itself. As the body resumes its own quality, it turns to the earth. The saints who have been the most perfect have advanced to that degree as to have nothing of all this. Some have lost it toward the end of their lives, becoming single and pure as the others, because they then had in reality and permanence what they had at first only as transient fruitions in the time of prevalence or dominion of the body. It is certain then that the soul, by death to itself, passes into its divine object. This is what I then experienced. I found the farther I went, the more my spirit was lost in its sovereign, who attracted it more and more to himself. He was pleased at first that I should know this for the sake of others and not for myself. Indeed, he drew my soul more and more into himself, till it lost itself entirely out of sight and could perceive itself no more. It seemed at first to pass into him. As one sees a river pass into the ocean, loses itself in it, its water for a time distinguished from that of the sea, till it gradually becomes transformed into the same sea and possesses all its qualities, so was my soul lost in God, who communicated to it his qualities, having drawn it out of all that it had of its own. Its life is an inconceivable innocence, not known or comprehended of those who are still shut up in themselves or only live for themselves. The joy which such a soul possesses in its God is so great that it experiences the truth of those words of the royal prophet. All they who are in thee, O Lord, are like persons ravished with joy. To such a soul the words of our Lord seem to be addressed. Your joy no man shall take from you. John 16:22. It is, as it were, plunged in a river of peace. Its prayer is continual. Nothing can hinder it from praying to God or from loving him. It amply verifies these words in the Canticles. I sleep, but my heart waketh, for it finds that even sleep itself does not hinder it from praying. Oh, unutterable happiness! Who could ever have thought that a soul which seemed to be in the utmost misery should ever find a happiness equal to this? Oh, happy poverty, happy loss, happy nothingness, which gives no less than God himself in his own immensity, no more circumscribed to the limited manner of the creature, but always drawing it out of that, to plunge it wholly into his own divine essence. Then the soul knows that all the states of self-pleasing visions, openings, ecstasies, and raptures are rather obstacles, that they do not serve the state which is far above them, because the state which has supports has pain to lose them, yet cannot arrive at this without such loss. In this are verified the words of an experienced saint. When I would, says he, possess nothing through self-love, everything was given me without going after it. O happy dying of the grain of wheat, which makes its produce an hundredfold! The soul is then so passive, so equally disposed to receive from the hand of God, either good or evil, as is astonishing. It receives both the one and the other without any selfish emotions, letting them flow and be lost as they come. They pass away as if they did not touch. After I finished my retreat with the Ursulines at Tonon, I returned through Geneva, and having found no other means of conveyance, the French resident lent me a horse. As I knew not how to ride, I made some difficulty of doing it, but as he assured me that it was a very quiet horse, I ventured to mount. There was a sort of a smith who, looking at me with a wild, haggard look, struck the horse a blow on the back, just as I had got upon him, which made him give a leap. He threw me on the ground with such force that they thought I was killed. I fell on my temple. My cheekbone and two of my teeth were broken. I was supported by an invisible hand, and in a little time I mounted as well as I could on another horse and had a man by my side to keep me up. My relations left me in peace at Gex. They had heard at Paris of my miraculous cure. It made a great noise there. Many persons in reputation for sanctity then wrote to me. I received letters from Mademoiselle de Lamoignon and another young lady who was so moved with my answer that she sent me 100 pistoles for our house, and let me know besides that, when we wanted money, I had only to write to her, and that she would send me all I could desire. They talked in Paris of printing an account of the sacrifice I had made and inserting in it the miracle of my sudden recovery. I don't know what prevented it, but such is the inconstancy of the creature that this journey, which drew upon me at that time so much applause, has served for a pretext for the strange condemnation which has since passed upon me. Chapter 5. My near relations did not signify any eager desire for my return. The first thing they proposed to me, a month after my arrival at Gex, was not only to give up my guardianship, but to make over all my estate to my children, and to reserve an annuity to myself. This proposition, coming from people who regarded nothing but their own interest, to some might have appeared very unpleasing, but it was in no wise so to me. I had not any friend to advise with. I knew not anyone whom I could consult about the manner of executing the thing, as I was quite free and willing to do it. It appeared to me that I had now the means of accomplishing the extreme desire I had of being comfortable to Jesus Christ, poor, naked, and stripped of all. They sent me an article to execute, which had been drawn under their inspection, and I innocently signed it, not perceiving some clauses which were inserted therein. It expressed that, when my children should die, I should inherit nothing of my own estate, but that it should revolve to my kindred. There were many other things which appeared to be equally to my disadvantage, though what I had reserved to myself was sufficient to support me in this place. Yet it was scarcely enough to do so in some other places. I then gave up my estate with more joy, for being thereby conformed to Jesus Christ than they could have who asked it from me. It is what I have never repented of, nor had any uneasiness about. What pleasure to lose all for the Lord! The love of poverty thus contracted is the kingdom of tranquility. I forgot to mention that toward the end of my miserable state of privation, when just ready to enter into newness of life, our Lord illuminated me so clearly to see that the exterior crosses came from Him, that I could not harbor any resentment against the persons who procured me them. On the contrary, I felt the tenderness of compassion for them, and had more pain for those afflictions which I innocently caused to them than for any which they had heaped upon me. I saw that these persons feared the Lord too much to oppress me as they did, had they known it. I saw His hand in it, and I felt the pain which they suffered through the contrariety of their humors. It is hard to conceive the tenderness which the Lord gave me for them, and the desire which I have had, with the utmost sincerity, to procure them every sort of advantage. After the accident which befell me, fall from a horse, from which I soon wonderfully recovered, the devil began to declare himself more openly mine enemy, to break loose and become outrageous. One night, when I least thought of it, something very monstrous and frightful presented itself. It seemed a kind face, which was seen by a glimmering bluish light. I don't know whether the flame itself composed that horrible face or appearance, for it was so mixed and passed by so rapidly that I could not discern it. My soul rested in its calm situation and assurance, and it appeared no more after that manner. As I arose at midnight to pray, I heard frightful noises in my chamber, and after I had lain down, they were still worse. My bed often shook for a quarter of an hour at a time, and the sashes were all burst. Every morning while this continued, they were found shattered and torn, yet I felt no fear. I arose and lighted my wax candle at a lamp, which I kept in my room, because I had taken the office of sacristan, and the care of waking the sisters at the hour they were to rise. Without having once failed in it for my indispositions, ever being the first in all the observances, I made use of my little light to look all over the room and at the sashes, at the very time the noise was strongest. As he saw that I was afraid of nothing, he left off all on a sudden and attacked me no more in person. But he stirred up men against me, and that succeeded far better with him, for he found them disposed to do what he prompted them to, zealously, inasmuch as they counted it a good thing to do me the worst of injuries. One of the sisters whom I had brought with me, a very beautiful girl, contracted an intimacy with an ecclesiastic who had authority in this place. At first he inspired her with an aversion for me, being well assured that if she placed confidence in me, I should advise her not to suffer his visits so frequently. She was under